From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, three regions in the state compete for billions in economic development money. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a push to bring Uber throughout the state. And after Canadians elect a new Liberal prime minister, observers in the North Country are watching closely. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Political and private sector leaders from around the state spent 3 days at the Capitol this week making their best case to win a share of $1.5 billion in economic development monies for their region. As the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, critics have called the competition the Hunger Games because under the rules, three regions will win, but four others will lose out on the funds.
Among the more ambitious plans presented by the regions competing for the money is returning the Olympics to New York.
In the words of Al Michaels, do you believe in miracles?
Representatives from the North Country made a video saying Lake Placid could repeat its role from 1932 and 1980.
What if this is the way forward to welcome the Olympics to New York once again?
The Mohawk Valley region, which titled its presentation Sparking Transformation, says if it wins the competition, it will dedicate 1% of all state funds to public artwork, civic innovations, and projects in underserved neighborhoods. But not surprisingly, many of the plans focus on expanding high-tech-related industries, which already have a foothold in some places, including the Capital Region and Rochester, and on expanding niche agricultural production like craft brewing. The Southern Tier emphasized its status as one of the poorest regions in the state when making its pitch. Harvey Stenger, president of the State University at Binghamton, says the plan focuses on health sciences and more manufacturing of cars and high-speed trains. But he says the plan ultimately aims to lure tourists to the area.
We really do believe that the Southern Tier isn't just going to be a region when we're done. We think it's going to be a destination.
The Cuomo administration's Empire State Development Corporation is overseeing the competition. Its CEO, Howard Zemsky, says the plans are outstanding.
All of the research that has gone into these plans, they're really grounded in really objective data with respect to the strengths of the regions. I think they're very holistic and comprehensive. They generally include revitalization components, workforce development components, anti-poverty components, building on the strengths of the region's economies. I like what they've done.
Not everyone thinks the distribution of taxpayer funds to the regions is a good idea. E.J. McMahon of the Empire Center, a fiscally conservative think tank, says state government should be spending the money instead on the state's crumbling infrastructure instead of on subsidized development.
Unless you're seeing to the basic infrastructure, this is like, you know, having a sort of a dilapidated house and putting really nice snazzy vinyl siding and new windows on it. But ultimately, the house is still in danger of falling down.
But McMahon says politically, Governor Cuomo and others can score more points by highlighting the region's dreams and ambitions.
Grandiose, glitzy plans for exciting new things is much more fun for politicians than repairing something you already have.
Zemsky, with Empire State Development, counters critics who say the money could be better spent elsewhere. He says the strategy of not investing in upstate in recent decades has not helped matters.
The empirical evidence is that for now that upstate's declined for 40 years, what we were doing wasn't working.
Zemsky says the intensified competition among the regions, which some have dubbed the Hunger Games, has brought out the best in the plans. And he says the money is secondary. The four regions who don't win will still receive at least $75 million through the regular regional awards held each December. Zemsky says planners will be surprised what they can accomplish, even without a large influx of money, now that they have a vision.
You have a coherent plan that you're going to follow for the next 5 years. You'd be amazed at how much you can get done if you stick with it.
Zemsky is from Buffalo, which is the only region not in the running for additional funds. The area is already the recipient of the Buffalo Billion, $1 billion from Cuomo to build, among other things, a giant solar factory. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, another busy week in politics in New York. We had a story in the New York Times about setbacks for Dean Skelos and Sheldon Silver in their corruption cases just before they're heading to trial.
I don't care how much money you spend from your campaign coffers for great lawyers. In the end, the feds have tremendous advantages. The way they do this is they find other people who have been either co-conspirators or involved in these accusations, and they say to them, how'd you like not to go to jail? How'd you like not to go to jail? Then all you have to do is testify. So, for example, there's the mesothelioma doctor up at Columbia who has, suffered some bad consequences as a result of this, because there was trading going on. You send me the clients and I'll get you the money for your program. I think that's going to be a tough one, by the way, to prove. I'm not thinking this is any easy shot, but the doctor seems angry now from the statements we read in the paper, and it can't be good news for Silver. As for Skelos, that turns out to be a much easier case, I think, in so many ways than the Silver sort of influence peddling, if that's the word you want to use, accusations. That's what they are, accusations. Because there's a trade using your office in order to get your son, a job. That one looks easier to me, but nothing's ever easy in all of this. Still, the feds have tremendous advantages.
A number of states, including California, Vermont, and Oregon, have what's called assisted suicide, and New York seems to be the next large state being targeted.
Well, yeah, on a personal level, and that's all it is now, personal level, wildly for it. I think you have to have, obviously, things that protect the rights of people who, you don't want kids throwing grandma from the train, that's for sure. On the other hand, we do it for our animals, and if somebody wants to get out, and, obviously they can get out in lots of different ways, then we should respect that, I believe, assuming the right safeguards, and let them do it. And, of course, there are organized religions which just don't believe in it. And they will unleash everything that they have in order to make it not happen. And they will find people to testify who have brain tumors, that they don't want this because, obviously, then they look like the bad people. The argument is that because they won't get out of the way. I think that this has to be worked out, but I certainly think it can be done.
Governor Cuomo has come out in support widely of the Uber ride-sharing program.
Well, he's right. This is a guy who had tremendous popularity problems. His numbers have shot down. But I think he's sort of on the right track these days, and he is obviously understanding what democracy is. Look, if you had a New York City taxi medallion allowing you to have a taxi cab, and you rented your cab out to people, And that medallion was worth over $1 million and is now worth much, much less because of the rise of ride sharing like Uber and Lyft and other places, other companies. You're angry. Will you give money to politicians so that the politicians will stop the Uber? You bet you will do that. And that's done all the time. Or as I think it was John R. Arbuckle, the famous philosopher, once said, you get what you pay for. So, there you are. Cuomo is right. He's on the side of the people. The people want Uber. They're going to get it.
Cuomo, as we've been hearing all along and you've been discussing with folks like Ken Lovett, the Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, who is on your Capital Connection program, is not necessarily nice to Mayor de Blasio.
Correct.
And to that end, he's attending a fundraiser for Hakeem Jeffries. He's running for Congress, but he is also rumored to be the next New York City mayoral candidate.
well, he can run for mayor, but it's going to be fruitless. I mean, if de Blasio is going to have an opponent, I think it's going to have to be a middle-class person who is yelling about we're not safe in our own city, because that's where de Blasio really has a problem. And I don't think de Blasio can be attacked either from the left or based on minority-type politics. I don't think that that's going to work for him, because he has that pretty well covered. So will there be a middle-class sort of protect our bodies and our assets and we don't want to get murdered and we don't... That's the kind of candidate that could do de Blasio real damage. The question is, can somebody find that candidate to run? So far, there's nobody on the horizon.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The surviving brother in the brutal church beating in New Hartford made his first appearance in court this week. Christopher Leonard testified he and his brother were beaten by family members and others in the church. Lucas Leonard died from his injuries. The hearing was to determine whether the assault charge against their half-sister would go to a grand jury. We get more now from David Chernatry with the New York Reporting Project at Utica College.
As 17-year-old Christopher Leonard entered the courtroom, he walked right past his sister Sarah Ferguson without so much as a glance. The court was arranged so they sat on opposite sides of the room, and throughout his testimony he looked at her only once to identify her in the courtroom. Ferguson, in handcuffs and shackles, never looked up. Leonard told the court the pastor of the Word of Life Church, Tiffany Irwin, asked his family to stay behind after Sunday service so he and his brother Lucas could tell what they had done, he said. What that referred to was not addressed in court. The district attorney says Lucas Leonard simply wanted to leave the church. But when the boys didn't answer the pastor's questions, Leonard said the meeting turned violent. He testified that the pastor's brother, Joseph Irwin, grabbed him by the shirt, then punched him. "Who else hit you?" asked Assistant DA Don Loopy. "David Morey, Sarah, my dad and mom," he said. All have been charged with crimes in this case, including manslaughter charges against his parents, Bruce and Deborah Leonard. Christopher Leonard said he was whipped with a folded-over cord about 4 feet long. He said his father hit him with it first, on the back. "Who else hit you?" asked Loopy. "My mother and sister. Where did Sarah hit you?" "Sarah hit me everywhere except my head," he said. As the packed courtroom strained to hear Leonard, he spoke so softly the defense attorney twice asked him to speak up. Leonard said that after being beaten, he was separated from Lucas, taken into a different room, and made to wear earmuffs and headphones. Later, he saw his brother Lucas collapse. He was laying on the ground moaning, he said, and after what seemed like half an hour, Pastor Tiffany called for his mother and dad. Leonard said he knew something wasn't right. "I rushed over and saw he wasn't breathing," he said. "I tried to give him CPR." After Lucas was taken to the hospital, Chris got in a van to go too. But instead of going in, he said, they pulled into a Home Depot parking lot. He got sick, he said, and had trouble breathing. Then he was taken back to the church, where he stayed until the police brought him out. After the hearing, Oneida County District Attorney Scott McNamara said this is a very active investigation and he will pursue anyone they feel has culpability in the crime.
We are looking at everybody that was involved in this incident. And we will present all of the information that we have to the grand jury, along with the charges that were originally filed and any other charges that we feel are appropriate, and that would include depraved indifference murder.
McNamara also commended Christopher Leonard for having the courage to testify.
We asked him to do something that's very difficult for anybody to do. And I can't imagine the stress that he was under to go into a courtroom with this much media coverage to testify against his sister.
New Hartford Town Justice William Verkler ruled there's enough evidence to proceed. The DA says they will go to a grand jury within 45 days. For WAMC, I'm David Chinatry with the New York Reporting Project at Utica College.
After a busy racing season at Saratoga Springs, the New York Racing Association has made a profit for the second year in a row. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
NYRA CEO Chris Kay presented good news to the organization's board of directors on Wednesday afternoon, the first meeting after the close of the Saratoga meet on Labor Day. After a racing season consumed by American Faro fever, Kay reported attendance and wagering were up.
As NYRA has placed a premium on improving the quality of our racing product, we believe the fans and our horsemen both responded in tremendous fashion at Saratoga this season. While most tracks in North America are reducing racing days and struggle to retain the status quo, the final numbers at Saratoga show a 14.1% increase in total handle on the NYRA product, excluding exports.
In addition to wagering, food and drink sales are also up. Kay said fans responded well to the new picnic table reservation system introduced in 2015. More than 2,200 picnic tables were reserved at the racetrack's new sports bar, and more than 2,800 were reserved in the backyard.
The reserved picnic table program was also popular with people who lived outside of the Saratoga area, who made a point to come to the spa and spend several days. Not only were they able to reserve their hotel rooms in advance, but now they are able to reserve a picnic table as well.
New data collected by NYRA revealed that only 40% of attendees came from the surrounding capital region. Senior Vice President Lynn LaRocca said a large portion of the 60% who traveled to New York took their time in Saratoga.
38% of them spend 9 days and 8 nights in Saratoga. They travel far and they stay long when they come to visit us. This data is going to help us as we establish and improve our partnerships with local businesses.
LaRocca said fan feedback would also help the organization improve perks for season pass holders. While NYRA attributed much of the success of this year's meet to fine weather and investments paying off at the track, Kay could not go without mentioning the excitement brought on by American Faro's Triple Crown win and second in the Traverse Stakes. Kay said Faro's arrival in the capital region mirrored that of a presidential visit.
Later that week was a moment that I, or anyone who was there, will never forget. On a crisp, clear Friday morning at the spa, more than 15,000 fans arrived to cheer on American Faro as he worked out for the Travers. I would like to again offer our sincere thanks to Ahmed Zayat and his family, as well as Bob Baffert and his family, for making the decision to bring the Triple Crown winner to Saratoga.
Kay called trainer Bob Baffer and owner Ahmed Zayat's decision to bring the champion thoroughbred to the spa a great display of sportsmanship. In the end, Faro was defeated by Keen Ice in the Midsummer Derby. At the close of his remarks, standing in for Chief Financial Officer Suzanne Stover, Kay said NYRA was on track to turn a profit for the second straight year. Last year, NYRA made its first profit in more than a decade, counting VLT funds.
NYRA's total operating income, including VLT funds, year-to-date was $3.6 million favorable to budget and $4 million higher compared to last year. NYRA remains on track to meet our 2015 budget and achieve an operating profit for the second straight year.
For more details, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Canadian voters have ended nearly a decade of conservative leadership under Prime Minister Stephen Harper. Liberals will form a majority government under the leadership of Justin Trudeau. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports the election has been observed closely by political and business interests near New York's border.
The victory in Monday's election by Trudeau's Liberal Party was stunning. The Liberals received 39.5% of the overall vote, compared to 32% for the Conservatives and 19.6% for the New Democrats. Stephen Harper, one of the longest-serving Western leaders, will step down as Conservative leader. Trudeau, the son of the late Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, addressed his supporters broadcast on CBC.
Canadians from all across this great country sent a clear message tonight. It's time for a change in this country, my friends, a real change. And I want to remind everyone as I've said many times over the course of this campaign, conservatives are not our enemies, they're our neighbors.
The conservatives ran a negative campaign, and that worked to their disadvantage, according to SUNY Plattsburgh Director for the Study of Canada, Dr. Christopher Kirky.
Public opinion polling was suggesting that it would be a reasonably strong minority government, would be a liberal government. But I think people just generally underestimated the appetite Canadians had to, frankly, get rid of Stephen Harper. Harper ran the prime ministership and approached the prime ministership and ran Canada in a decidedly autocratic, secretive, non-transparent, non-consultative, and ultimately non-accountable manner. So I think a lot of people were just happy to get rid of Harper.
Kirky expects an invigorated relationship between the U.S. and Canada.
I think we're going to see a sharper, more welcome focus placed on the U.S.-Canada relationship. As far as our local relationship goes, I don't think we'll see anything dramatic by way of immediate changes in the relationship for our listening area with Canada. Mr. Trudeau's principal policies will, if anything, help that relationship.
Former New York Congressman Bill Owens' district runs along the U.S.-Canadian border. The Democrat, who retired after last term, co-chaired the Congressional Northern Border Caucus. He is currently a legal consultant on cross-border commerce. Owens expects cross-border policies to be largely unaffected by the change in the Canadian federal government.
The Liberal government taking over probably has no on-the-ground impact on our relationship with Canada and in particular with Quebec. They will largely continue the trade policies that the Harper government had. So I'm not looking for any major shifts in our economy and in the amount of traffic and trade that we do with Canada. I think what you're going to see is a large focus on boosting the economy, boosting the currency of Canada so it gets closer to par with the United States. And I think you're going to move to do that primarily through large infrastructure investments in Canada. And I think that's where you'll see Trudeau focus.
CDC Real Estate founder and past president Mark Berry says he's concerned about what will happen to the value of the Canadian dollar with the change to Liberal control.
This fellow ran on the platform that he would put his country $10 billion a year into debt for the next 3 years, presumably for infrastructure reasons, for climate change, and so on and so forth. And the Canadian dollar is already pretty far down there now. And if you see the country of Canada start to run, you know, almost structural deficits for 3 or 4 years, you wonder what's going to happen to the value of the Canadian dollar. That is more of a concern, I think, to business people here, the value of the Canadian dollar, than whether it's liberal or conservative in Ottawa.
The Liberals won 184 of 338 seats in Parliament. Conservatives took 99 seats, but that was a 22% drop in their number of seats. A party must have 170 seats to have the majority and hold the Prime Minister's seat in Canada. Trudeau is expected to take power within 2 weeks. Voter turnout was 68%. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1543. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.